The Exchange Daily Podcast is brought to you by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, sitting in for Laura Kanoi, and this is The Exchange. As a crowded field of Republican presidential hopefuls rehearses in advance of tonight's debate doubleheader, the politics of immigration reform promises to take center stage once again. Debate watchers are likely to hear a plethora of policy prescriptions, from tighter border security to e-verification and guest worker programs. The battle over immigration reform has been full of heated rhetoric and political peril for several presidential election cycles now, and the 2016 contest is shaping up to be no different. Meanwhile, the Democratic presidential candidates have their own immigration challenges as they look to reassure labor unions on wage and job security while tending to an increasingly powerful Hispanic constituency that has been crucial to the party's recent success in presidential elections. Today on The Exchange, we're talking about immigration on the campaign trail. Let's hear from you. How important is the issue of immigration reform to your vote decision? Which candidates do you think have the most promising ideas for reform? Have you been happy with the Obama administration's stance on immigration? And what do you think are the long-term challenges facing the United States on immigration policy? You can call into The Exchange at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange, all one word. And I have two guests joining me for the show this morning. On the line from Washington, D.C. is Sungmin Kim. She's assistant editor at Politico, where she reports on congressional politics with a special focus on immigration. Sungmin, welcome back to The Exchange.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
And joining me from Henniker, New Hampshire is Wayne Lesperance. Wayne is professor of political science at New England College, where he also directs the master's program in public policy. Wayne, you're a regular, and it's great to have you back on The Exchange.
Well, thanks, Dean. Thanks for having me.
Before we start talking about immigration in the 2016 campaign, let's take a step back and talk just briefly about what has happened on immigration in Washington over the past few years. Sungmin, let me go to you first. In 2013 in Congress, we had a comprehensive attempt at immigration reform. Can you tell us what happened there?
Yeah, so that's exactly what happened. We remember the thumping that Mitt Romney got from Latino voters in the 2012 elections. He lost that vote by more than 40% to President Obama. And that seeing that margin in the Latino vote and in the Asian vote as well really spurred the Republican Party to say, look, we need to do something to help, you know, to kind of, you know, improve our brand among minority voters. And that loss really spurred key senators on Capitol Hill to, you know, sort of get the band back together. We had, you know, powerful people like John McCain and Chuck Schumer. They recruited key, you know, sort of rising stars like Marco Rubio to the Gang of Eight. And they worked for months to bring together this comprehensive immigration reform bill. It would have created a pathway to citizenship for the 11 million people who are here illegally. It would have been a long road, about 13 years. It got 68 votes in the Senate in June 2013, which in a very polarized Senate is a pretty remarkable margin. However, that bill never got a vote in the House. House Republicans said, we want to do immigration reform, but we're going to do it in our own way. But it just never happened, and that comprehensive immigration reform bill written by those eight senators just slowly died.
Mm-hmm. And we should note that in that Gang of Eight, as you mentioned, Marco Rubio and I think also Lindsey Graham, both Republican candidates, for president this time around. Wayne, you know, we had the couple of executive orders by President Obama on immigration in the last few years, dealing with the Dreamers, and also with holding off deportation of several million undocumented immigrants. But just your general sense over the last couple of election cycles, has immigration resonated as an issue, or is this something new?
I think it's relatively new in the way that it's resonating. Certainly this morning, Andy Smith on NHPR was reporting that, according to the Granite State poll, he has it as the number two issue in New Hampshire behind jobs, which is stunning. I mean, if you think about it, I think going back to the 2012 cycle, immigration would have probably been in the, six or seven range in terms of priorities. So it's clearly risen in importance, at least among New Hampshire voters, and I'm guessing that that's true nationally. And so we're seeing renewed focus on this. I think part of it is that Republicans are wrestling with the reality here of Hispanic voters that they have to have a message for, and their own base that's increasingly concerned about immigration. The death of that young woman in San Francisco really has added fuel to the fire of getting folks, fired up about this issue here in the Granite State. So I think there's a variety of things that have come together that has raised the level of importance, not the least of which, obviously, is some of the language we're hearing from candidates, some of it quite, red hot, that really has people paying closer attention to immigration.
Yeah. Soonmin, you've been covering this for a while. Your sense of, sort of how the sort of previous debates, the Obama executive actions and the failed comprehensive attempt in 13, sort of how is that shaping the current debate?
I think especially the executive actions that President Obama issued last November are having a huge impact. Obviously, every Republican candidate in some fashion has denounced them as some sort of executive amnesty, that he had no power to grant such sweeping protections to an estimated about 5 million undocumented immigrants. But it's actually kind of given a difficult, it's kind of been a conundrum for Republicans, too, because you see polls where Latinos really do favor these executive actions that President Obama took that are also now tied up in the courts. So then Republicans have to answer, if you're going to kill these executive actions, then what are you going to do for me and my family? And that's been an uncomfortable question that Republicans have had to answer. You've had, Jeb Bush, who we know is probably the most, pro-immigration reform candidate in the field. He has said he favors ending those executive actions, but replacing them with comprehensive immigration reform. Every other candidates has really denounced those actions. On the Democratic side, we've seen Hillary Clinton really embrace those actions, even though there are legal complications with them, and say, look, I would have gone even further than what President Obama would have done in providing protection to immigrants. So you see how those actions have really scrambled the field, both scrambled the topic of immigration, both on the Democratic side and on the Republican side.
So we have this failed attempt at comprehensive reform. We have President Obama doing some things on his own. So given that prelude, let's turn our attention now to the current campaign. We can start with Republicans, but we're also going to talk about Democrats. Wayne, where else to start but with Donald Trump and his provocative comments on undocumented Mexican immigrants? I think we're pretty much all familiar with what he said at this point about, criminal behavior and other sorts of things. But sort of more broadly, what's been the impact of those initial comments on immigration as a campaign issue?
The Donald Trump phenomenon is one that has really tapped into something, that explains, I think, some of his polling success. People are looking at Washington, D.C. increasingly as, a place where things aren't getting done, right? So even what we just heard, right, the idea that the president issued executive orders, to try to address some component, some piece of a broader immigration challenge, raises gets a lot of pushback, because what Republicans are asking for is something comprehensive. They all start with border security. They all start with securing the border. And so we saw Donald Trump make a trip down to the border at what he describes as great personal risk to himself. We're familiar with the language he used, which really set the stage for, a very big discussion and frankly, accusations that the language that he used was borderline racist. Beyond that, you have a lot of voters out there who say, well, you know, they are coming in. And we hear on the on the news these stories of sanctuary cities, and we're not really sure what that means, and bad things happening there of when a municipality doesn't cooperate with federal regulations and you know, a crime gets committed. So, you know, I think what you can give Donald Trump credit for, if you're looking to do that, is for kickstarting a conversation on immigration among segments of the population that are very frustrated with a Washington that isn't working and very frustrated that we, after all these years, all this talk about immigration reform, nothing is really happening. And you know, here he is at least talking about it in a way that sort of taps into some people's views.
And let's listen to Donald Trump in a recent CNN interview sounding a little bit softer on the issue.
We have to bring great people into this country, okay? And I want to bring, I love the idea of immigration, but it's got to be legal immigration. Now, a lot of these people are helping us, whether it's the grapes or whether it's jobs, and sometimes it's jobs, in all fairness, I love our country, but sometimes it's jobs that a citizen of the United States doesn't want to do. I mean, there are jobs that a lot of people don't want to do. I want to move them out, and we're going to move them back in and let them be legal, but they have to be in here legally.
That is Donald Trump in a recent CNN interview. Sungmin, sounding a little bit softer there, but also talking about moving everyone out and moving them back in. What's he getting at there?
So he is proposing that the U.S. government find everyone who is here illegally. As we know, that's about 11.4 million people spread out all over the country, deep into the interior of the United States, making them go back to their home countries and then letting, you know, quote, the good ones come back. And that is in every way of people, experts will say that is not possible to do. You cannot actually find millions of people. Various provisions, various versions of this idea have actually come up in Congress in years past as an idea. In the 2006 and 2007 immigration debate, it was called Report to Deport in some respect, and some Republicans had proposed that idea. So these immigrants who are here illegally, you know, come back and do it the quote right way. But it's just in practice, speaking in a practical sense, this is something that can't be done. So that's why you hear, you know, obviously Lindsey Graham and Jeb Bush saying, you know, we have to have sort of a path to legal status, whether it's citizenship or any other status. But that has to be tough. But you can't just round up that'll deport 11 million people.
So do you think his tone's a little softer there?
His tone is a little bit softer there. I mean, when he announced his candidacy for the presidential race, all we could remember was his comments, you know, basically labeling Mexicans as rapists and drug dealers. And that's by far the harshest tone that any Republican has taken. And it, quite frankly, was a bit offensive.
We need to jump. Sungmin, let me jump in a second. We need to take a quick break. We'll come back to talking about Donald Trump and immigration in a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis. Today on The Exchange, a look at what presidential candidates are saying about immigration on the campaign trail. We invite you to call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post on our Facebook page. I have two guests joining me for the show today, Sungmin Kim, who is assistant editor at Politico, where she covers Congress, and Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College. And I should mention, you can go to our website, nhpr.org, and listen to Josh Rogers' report on immigration on the campaign trail. And Wayne, we were talking about Donald Trump before the break. And Wayne, let me come to you now. This sort of issue of the Hispanic vote and kind of Donald Trump sort of making those initial comments and then sort of trying to back away a little bit. Talk a little bit about the importance of that vote in the election in general and sort of the challenges for the Republican Party.
Right. So when we look at what made President Obama's electoral victories so successful, we identify what some have called the Obama coalition, right? Young voters, women, and Hispanics, you know, sort of outperforming past, you know, turnout numbers. So Hispanic voters become very important to Republicans, you know, as we go forward. In the last election, I believe Romney got 27% of Hispanic vote. I forget the percentage, but George Bush, in his first election, I think, had the highest among Hispanics in recent electoral history. The Republican Party is trending in the wrong direction among Hispanics. And I think, as Sung Min mentioned earlier, you know, when there's criticism of the president's executive orders, when there's talk of, you know, sort of repealing or pulling back on these moves, you know, Hispanic voters naturally say, okay, so what's the alternative? What's the alternative plan? And that has not yet, we've not seen that materialize. So Republicans have a problem talking to Hispanic voters in a way that gets them to vote Republican, and that's important, you know, in terms of future electoral success. It's also important in terms of the future health of the party.
Sung Min, your sort of final thoughts on Donald Trump before we move on to some of the other candidates.
I think he's been a very interesting candidate to watch, but I think the way that he's been able to tap into the issue of immigration has been really interesting to see, because we knew immigration was going to be a very interesting issue for Republicans to tackle, considering the diversity of views in the field on that issue. But it's been Donald Trump who's been really able to tap into the conservative anger on immigration that frankly helped derailed the chances of immigration reform on Capitol Hill, particularly in the House. You know, the conservatives who are really, you know, outraged about the lack of border security and enforcement in the interior of the United States, who believe that people here illegally shouldn't be able to, you know, so-called cut in line in front of other immigrants. He's been really able to amplify that anger more than any other candidate. And you see how that effect, maybe not Donald Trump specifically, but that, you know, anger towards the nation's immigration policies is rippling on Capitol Hill. You have some legislation targeting these sanctuary cities that was at the center of the death of the San Francisco woman last month. So and you're going to expect more bills like that to come in the next few months.
Right. So let's take a little bit of a step back now and look at the broader field of Republicans. You know, there are a number of commonalities you hear among these candidates in terms of the types of things they say they want to do on immigration. Let's start by listening to former Texas Governor Rick Perry at the Monday night's voter forum talking a little bit about the kind of the technology of border security.
It takes boots on the ground. It takes the security fencing in the metropolitan areas, and you have aviation assets. And I'm talking about from Tijuana to El Paso to Brownsville, flying 24/7, looking down with the technology to be able to see what's going on and identifying where there's activities that are obviously illegal or suspicious, and fast response team.
That's former Texas Governor Rick Perry talking about border security in Monday night's voter forum. And Wayne Lesperance, I have a laundry list of suggestions in front of me. Border security is one of them. Can you give me a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of the kinds of things we're hearing from the Republican side in general?
So there's agreement on, you know, and they all begin with border security. You have to secure the border, and they'll give you a variety of reasons. But Rick Perry, as a governor of Texas, has lived the reality of, you know, his constituents having to deal with, you know, a porous border and everything that entails. And so border security is where the candidates start. You'll hear a lot of them talk about something called E-Verify. Right, sort of putting some burden on employers to make sure that the people that they employ are legally eligible to work. There's a split among Republicans over whether the 11 million folks can be found, can be rounded up, and can be sent home. There are those like Jeb Bush, John Kasich, who would say it's not realistic, and frankly, unless they are engaged in, you know, other criminal activity, we should find a way to make this work for them. There's you know, those who would advocate for a path to citizenship, those who would advocate a path to legal status, and then those who would simply say they just have to leave. So there's some diversity of views there among those. There are other sort of side issues, Dean, that, you know, come up as well. For example, the in-state tuition for kids attending schools. If you are the child of somebody who's not here legally, your ability to attend university or college, you know, in Texas, for example, Rick Perry created the opportunity of having in-state tuition for those students. So, you know, just those are some of the kinds of things that we're hearing about from these folks. Rick Santorum is another person who staked out a pretty hardcore position, and he's gone even further, saying not only do we need to do all of these very, very stringent things and make sure we get rid of Those folks are here illegally. But we should also cut legal immigration by 25%. So in a way, conflating legal and illegal immigration issues that we're not hearing many of the other candidates doing.
Sung Min, I'm going to come to you in a second. But before we do that, Wayne, you mentioned Rick Santorum. And we have him talking also at Monday night's voters forum. So let's hear what he had to say.
We have never seen such decrepit wage growth. And who are the 90% of the people who are coming in legally and illegally? Almost all unskilled workers. To compete against our hardworking men and women who want a chance to succeed, but we're not giving it to them. I'm the only person in this race that has called for not just securing the border, following up on the visas, imposing E-Verify, but calling for a 25% reduction in the unskilled labor that's coming into this country. It is a serious problem. Everyone else is dancing around it.
That is former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum at Monday night's Voters Forum. And Sung Min, two questions for you there. First, we heard Rick Perry, and he kind of likes to sort of talk about Texas and how much better they are at this than the rest of the country. And also now Rick Santorum throwing in this extra idea of a 25% cut in unskilled labor. Your reactions to both of those candidates?
I think Governor Perry is using one of the most effective traits that he could. I mean, he's governed a state that's on the border that really sees this issue at the front line, and he really made his mark, too, in last summer's border crisis. Remember when all the unaccompanied children from Central America were arriving at the southern border, and it was a problem that had really was a conundrum for the Obama administration and for Congress to deal with these children. Rick Perry was really out there, you know, when he was still in office as governor. You know, he deployed the National Guard to the border. He implemented all these other strict security measures. And also, remember, the border crisis last summer was what really kind of stirred even more tougher, more hardline immigration views in the American public. He's tried to use that to his advantage and with using his experience as the Texas governor. Unfortunately for him, he is not in the debate tonight, in the primetime debate tonight, so he won't be able to talk about these issues in front of a major audience. He did, obviously, at the voters' forum on Monday night. And as you mentioned, Rick Santorum really has taken an even much more conservative view on immigration. You'll have, you know, most Republicans, both on and off Capitol Hill, you know, thinking the Chamber of Commerce type folks, the business community, really do favor more legal immigration into the United States, whether it's these high-tech or high-skilled visas. We're thinking Silicon Valley, Microsoft, or the lower-skilled labor as well. But that's also been a really divisive issue for the Republican Party, because you do have other conservatives who believe that bringing in more immigrants, period, hurts, takes away jobs from American workers. And that's something that Rick Santorum has been particularly vocal about. But you've also seen Scott Walker espouse that view as well.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, Rick Perry, and I think also Rick Santorum will be in the 5 p.m. debate this evening, not in the later 9 p.m. main event with the 10 candidates. I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about immigration on the campaign trail in the 2016 presidential race. I have two guests with me, Sung Min Kim. She's assistant editor at Politico, where she covers Congress and has reported extensively on immigration. And Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College, director of the Center for Civic Engagement. He also directs their Master's in Public Policy program. So, Wayne, let me turn to you and ask you, part of the strategy for Republicans is to kind of tap into the party's base on this issue. In your mind, which candidates are sort of using or speaking most aggressively to court the kind of anti-immigration base of the party?
Well, you'd have to go back to at least start with Trump. I mean, because he has, taken such a strong position on, the criminality associated that he believes is associated with Mexican illegals, and it ties into the crime that took place in San Francisco. I mean, the timing of that really could not have worked better for him. So I'd probably start there. You can certainly see, as we just said, Rick Santorum trying to piggyback on that as well, and doing it in an interesting way, talking about American workers and almost sort of an economic populist kind of approach, which is a little bit different. In some ways, I think that has an opportunity to resonate as well. This is something obviously that comes up on the Democratic side, particularly among union workers, and union organizations when they talk about the challenges that come with increased immigration. So, I think those two have really staked out some ground. I think Scott Walker has as well. He's, really been clear, for example, in Wisconsin, not to use taxpayers' money in Wisconsin to underwrite, any of these activities that would be supportive of illegal. So, for example, he's opposed to the in-state tuition or getting access to some health care. I think it's called the Badger Plan in Wisconsin, something like that. Healthcare funds, for illegal. So those three probably are the three that would jump out at me. Mm-hmm.
Sungmin, is it true that Scott Walker has kind of stiffened his position in recent years? I recall that he was sort of a bit more open to the idea of citizenship in the past.
He definitely has. He has been open, and I believe supported some sort of a pathway to legal status for those who are here illegally. He flipped on that issue around the time he started to really take a look at running for the Republican presidential nomination. I believe he has admitted that his views on the issue had evolved, considering learning more about the immigration topic. And I think Governor Chris Christie also has kind of toughened that view on immigration as well, concerning a pathway to citizenship. But you also have heard several stories of Scott Walker being a little bit more open on immigration privately. I believe both the Wall Street Journal the Wall Street Journal has reported that a few months ago that he was telling people at a private meeting in New Hampshire that I would be open to some sort of a pathway to citizenship, which was completely different from his rhetoric on the campaign trail. And there have been other instances where he's kind of signaled different things in private than he has been saying in public. So I think for Walker, a policy area that he's really going to have to iron out and make clear to the voters where he is.
And of course, we should mention Jeb Bush and Wayne. He comes to this from it's sort of an interesting perspective. And let's listen to former Florida Governor Jeb Bush campaigning in Hudson last month, talking about immigration.
And this is where people get hot about this. So fasten your seatbelts. I don't mean to sound like I'm saying something controversial, but I honestly think we need to provide a path to legalized status, not citizenship, for illegal immigrants. The idea that we're going to round 11 million people up and send them back is so it's not real. It's not grounded in reality.
That is former Florida Governor Jeb Bush campaigning in Hudson recently. And Wayne, Governor Bush had a proposal this week, and also talk a little bit about sort of his family background and why this is such a complicated issue for him.
Right. Well, not too long ago, Jeb Bush gave a Spanish language interview where he spoke for the full 30-minute interview in Spanish, right? And I remember thinking, wow, a bilingual president. I mean, that's pretty exciting. That's pretty new. He's married to a Hispanic woman. He's obviously the father of George P. Bush, who's an elected official in Texas, who's also obviously Hispanic. And so this is real for him. This is, this is something that I'm sure he's talking about at home. I'm sure he's talking about it in life, as opposed to just on the campaign trail in time for an election. And he's right. At the very beginning of that sound clip you played, this is where he gets hit by, the right side, the right wing of the party, because they basically say, well, he's for amnesty. And he is for a path to legalized status. Of all the candidates, I would say at this point anyway, he's probably identified the most specific set of things that he wants to do. A lot of it's focused on the border. So, for example, just to run through these things very quickly, he wants more boots on the ground in the form of forward operating bases along the border. He wants physically, this is what Rick Perry was talking about, boots on the ground there at the border. Making better use of technology, counter-surveillance technology, drones, improving border infrastructure, E-Verify. We've heard a lot of folks talk about that. And the fifth point he made was no federal funding for sanctuary cities. We're going to hear a heck of a lot more about that, I'm sure, because of what happened in San Francisco. And frankly, I don't know that a lot of Americans had any idea there was something called sanctuary cities. Mm-hmm. His last point about it being just unrealistic to round up 11 million folks and deport them, you're hearing a lot more folks say and acknowledge. Interestingly, at one point, Chris Christie did a CNN interview where they asked him, what would you do about those 11 million people? And Christie's answer was, I don't know. And I think that's probably one of the most honest answers we've heard from a political figure in a very long time, because the reality is it's very tough. What do you do about those folks?
Go ahead, Wayne. Go ahead.
No, that's it.
Sungmin, you know, obviously we have a Jeb Bush, but we should also mention here Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida also have Latino heritage, and they're part of, they're in the mix as well, but in a slightly different way.
It definitely. I mean, as we talked about earlier in the show, Rubio, our Senator Marco Rubio, had a very pivotal role in the Gang of Eight legislation that passed the Senate 2 years ago but had since died. He was really seen as a pivotal figure that could bring conservatives on board with the legislation. Rubio was seen as kind of the, you know, the salesman of this comprehensive immigration reform bill to the conservative community, to the Tea Parties. But after it passed and you see the resistance mount to this bill in the House, he really did back off, you know. And I think his position gets, you know, mangled at times. But I think where he is now is that he still does believe in the different parts of the immigration bill, but he doesn't believe that you can do it all at once, like in one single bill, like the Senate Gang of Eight bill did. And you see him talking so much more about the economic benefits of improving the nation's immigration system and improving border security rather than what do we do with the 11 million. So you've seen that rhetoric really shift as well. Ted Cruz was one of the bigger opponents of the Senate Gang of Eight bill. When that debate was going on, he opposes a pathway to citizenship. He believes anything along those lines is amnesty. He has been one of the most vocal critics in Congress of the president's executive actions on immigration. And he's also been very vocal on the sanctuary cities issue as well. I mean, notably, he's even with the rise of Donald Trump and after his comments towards immigrants, and it was really Rick Perry who went after him initially on those comments. But, you know, Ted Cruz, you know, supported Donald Trump even when asked about those comments. And he said Donald Trump was refreshing. He appreciated what he had to say. So Cruz, it really falls on that part of the spectrum, conservative spectrum, and has a different take on immigration than some other candidates.
Sungmin, we need to take one more quick break. We'll come back and talk more about the Democrats and immigration. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis. Today we're discussing immigration on the campaign trail, and you can join us by calling 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email us, exchange@nhpr.org, and you can post on our Facebook page. I have two guests joining me for the show today. Sungmin Kim is assistant editor at Politico, where she covers Congress and has reported extensively on immigration, and Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College, where he also directs the master's program in public policy. And I want to mention that you can go to our website, nhpr.org, and listen to Josh Rogers' report on immigration on the campaign trail. And Sungmin and Wayne, let's turn to the Democrats now. They have their own issues that they're dealing with here, maybe not quite as extensive, but let's listen to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and a clip of a speech of his from a recent meeting.
We cannot continue to run an economy where millions are made so vulnerable because of their undocumented status. We have to ask ourselves, who benefits from this exploitation? And to understand that it is not only the undocumented workers who suffer, but every worker in America, because that pushes us into a race to the bottom.
And that is Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders giving a speech at the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. And Wayne, let me turn to you first. Listening to Senator Sanders kind of raises an interesting question about the relationship between labor unions and undocumented workers.
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, from a practical political sense, I mean, this is a challenge because labor unions are trying to protect, obviously, wages and benefits for their own membership, and certainly folks who are working illegally and who are allowed to stay. you know, you just create greater supply of labor, and that tends to depress wages. You know, from Sanders' point of view, though, this is about economic justice. This is about, you know, a population that is incredibly vulnerable and continues to be taken advantage of. And so it's a very different tone. It's a very different perspective than we're hearing from the Republican side, obviously. But beyond that, you know, as he says, it's a race to the bottom. The more you continue to allow this sort of under-the-table economy to exist and without serious punishment of employers, the more pressure there is on keeping wages low, which hurts everyone. So his argument would be, look, unions benefit if we get a handle on this because we take away that pressure, that downward pressure on wages. But you're right. In a political sense, you know, union leadership, this is a point they'd like to see the senator perhaps modify his position on.
Sungmin, your take on Bernie Sanders and his relationship labor unions and then also undocumented immigrants.
Yeah, on his position on immigration, particularly as it relates to labor, he's, you know, been actually remarkably consistent, even though he voted against the immigration bill in 2007 and for the immigration bill in 2013. Back in the 2007 debate, the labor unions were very divided on whether to support the comprehensive immigration reform efforts, particularly because, you know, they were dealing with the issue of, hey, this could be a way to get a pathway to citizenship for the millions who are here undocumented. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, the business community is proposing to bring in lots more workers that they would have concerns with. And, you know, and in 2007, Bernie Sanders sided with the unions, and he talked a lot. Some of his rhetoric even echoes a little bit of what Rick Santorum has been saying in terms of bringing, you know, millions of new legal workers into the system who are largely unskilled, you know, depressed wages for, you know, some American workers. And he's gotten criticism from some immigration advocates on that point because advocates say studies have shown that, you know, increased immigration does help the economy as a whole. But he is still very, he defends those comments. That's what he believes. He also is concerned about worker exploitation, as he said in the clip that was just played, and making sure that, you know, immigrant workers, whether they are undocumented or not, get proper worker protections. And that's been a big issue for him. In terms of the people who are already here illegally, he supports a pathway to citizenship. He hasn't had that. And that hasn't been a waffling issue for him at all. But he has had to answer some questions about his views on legal immigration.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, we have an email here from Ben in Hudson. And Ben is talking about this issue of only viewing undocumented immigrants as individuals coming in to take American jobs. Ben says, what about the idea that these immigrants are actually coming here as refugees from a sort of a very violent drug cartel activity in South and Central America? And Wayne, let me start with you on that.
It's an incredibly great, good question. I mean, here's the thing that we're not hearing. You know, when I was in graduate school, I remember one of the professors really approaching immigration in a different way. And he said, you know, you have to approach this as both push and pull factors. We understand what's attracting people to the United States, the opportunity for job, for you know, a better infrastructure, better legal system, greater protections, things like that. But what we've spent very little time focusing on is what pushes people out. What would it take to convince folks living someplace south of the border that it is in their interest to undertake this incredibly dangerous journey and risk just getting into the United States? What would it take to get somebody to do that? And nobody really in a meaningful way is talking about this. So whether it's drug cartels, whether it's lack of economic opportunity, we have something that we call economic refugees out there in the world, you know, whatever it is that's driving them, part of the overall effort at immigration reform has to be to take a look at those push factors. You know, how do we work with those other countries to try to reduce those? And it's a huge task, but it's an important one. And so I think Ben's got a really important question here. We've got people that come to the United States because they're afraid of dying. They're afraid of absolutely horrific conditions, and they don't want to raise their children in that environment. We can understand that. So what do we do to address that? I think it's a really important question. Unfortunately, we're not hearing the candidates address that.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, Sungmin, is this something we really hear from candidates much at all?
It's an issue that really doesn't go touch, because I think it's a on how to deal with the nation's asylum system and the refugee system. It's another part of immigration that could really open up a Pandora's box for any candidate, because it is a really difficult issue. And even this was actually a point in last summer's border crisis where Republicans and even President Obama and the Obama administration advocated for a tougher approach on the border for the kids who are arriving and saying, you know, they should be turned back more quickly. We actually saw Hillary Clinton say this before she had announced her candidacy, saying, you know, some of these kids are probably going to be sent back home. But that really angered Democrats. What the Obama administration had initially supported really angered a lot of Democrats on Capitol Hill, as well as immigration advocates who argued that, look, these kids are coming from Honduras, which is the murder capital of the world. They're coming from places that are not safe, and they're looking for a refuge. That argument, that issue kind of, you know, didn't resonate as well, and Democrats really had to fight to make that point clear.
And Sungmin, you mentioned Hillary Clinton. Let's listen to what Secretary Clinton had to say in a recent CNN interview.
We know we're not going to deport 11 or 12 million people. We shouldn't be breaking up families. We shouldn't be stopping people from having the opportunity to be fully integrated legally within our country. It's good for us. It's good economically. It's good for the taxes that will be legally collected. It's good for the children so that they can go as far as their hard work and talent will take them. So I am 100% behind comprehensive immigration reform that includes a path to citizenship.
That is Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State and Senator from New York, in a recent CNN interview. And Wayne, sounds like full support for a path to citizenship there.
It does. Path to citizenship, recognition that rounding up 11 million people is not something that's really practical. I mean, certainly, you know, taking a very strong position, on wanting to start with, you know, sort of the internal challenges, you know, as opposed to the border security piece, which is where Republicans typically begin.
Sungmin, we mentioned a little bit earlier. Let me get your reaction on Hillary Clinton first, and then we'll have one other question for you. But so, Hillary Clinton, how is this playing for her?
I think she recognized that very early on that this is an immigration issue that she needs to seize early and often and quickly, because especially with how she handled the issue when she ran for president in 2008, people still talk about how she responded to or her opposition to granting driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants in New York State. And that answer has dogged her these last several years. Now, she came out early. I mean, immigration was, I believe, the first issue where she made a detailed stance and a detailed proposal after she announced her candidacy for president. She was hosting a roundtable in Nevada. She was surrounded by Dreamers, those kids who came here illegally with their parents when they were children. And they said, I will, you know, not only will I advocate for, you know, comprehensive immigration reform with a pathway to citizenship, you know, if Congress doesn't do their job, I'm going to go even further than what Obama did. So she recognized that this was an issue that she really should seize early on. And that's why you keep seeing her talking about this issue.
And Wayne, I don't think we're going to hear the Democrats actually debate on this until October, but we've got the two events tonight at 5 and 9 p.m. In terms of immigration, what are you going to be looking for tonight?
Well, you know, it all begins and ends, it seems, with Donald Trump. I mean, will Donald Trump continue to make the kinds of statements that he's made in the past? Seems as in the past week he's really tried to mellow a little bit, to sort of pull back in terms of his presentation. But frankly, I'm interested to hear, do we hear specifics, you know, on the Jeb Bush plan? Do we hear specifics from others like Marco Rubio? Will someone try to claim this issue as their signature issue and speak authoritatively to it? Or will we hear a lot of, you know, sound bites, 30-second, you know, sort of talking point type things? That, for me, is what I'm looking for among the Republicans.
Sungmin, what are your expectations?
I think it's obviously going to be one of the major issues in the debate tonight. And I too am looking for how they lay out specifics on what they will do as president, and what if any involvement from Congress that they will do. I mean, you're going to have the guys who talk about needing to do comprehensive immigration reform. You'll hear Jeb Bush talk about that. You'll hear Lindsey Graham even talk about that in the so-called happy hour debate earlier in the night. But But I think especially with the candidates who haven't had too much firsthand experience dealing with immigration issues, I'm thinking, you know, the Scott Walkers and it's more the governor types who don't deal with immigration on a day-to-day basis, like a senator would have when they were debating the legislation. I'm interested in seeing how what their policies are. And I'm also, if Donald Trump heats up the rhetoric again on immigration, I'm also very curious to see how or if Republicans do respond to that.
Wayne, so, we can look forward to tonight, but let's jump ahead into the future just a little bit. Let's say we have a Democratic president in 2016 or take office in January of 2017, still have a Republican Congress in all likelihood. Is anything going to happen here, or are we just going to be stuck?
Well, if what's passed is prologue, I wouldn't expect a whole lot of forward motion. I mean, there really are fundamental differences. You'd like to believe that there'd be some version of the Gang of Eight that could come back in a bipartisan way and sort of recreate, something that could get through. But it really folks have really staked out some pretty hard positions on this, and it's difficult to imagine, given the frame that you've described, it really amounting to a whole much.
Any chance, Wayne, that you think a Democratic president would be willing to, as Republicans want, move on border security first, or would that be problematic for a Democrat?
I think somebody like Hillary Clinton, who has more of a, I think, I don't want to say conservative, but she has at times shown more of a hawkish disposition when it comes to foreign policy than a Bernie Sanders would. And it's possible that, Joe Biden, if Joe Biden were the nominee, Joe Biden sort of the master negotiator and with the relationships he has, there might be a possibility that you could see something happen there. And that would be probably a first step. That would probably be a requisite to see any progress. But boy, as optimistic as I normally am, I'm not overly optimistic in this case.
And Sungmin, you get the other hypothetical. I think we all agree that Congress is likely to stay with Republicans, but perhaps we get a Republican president inaugurated in January of 2017. What might happen then?
I think especially depending on the Republican president and how much, they make a priority on immigration reform. But we saw that the issue, if for those who want to get immigration reform done, the problem really was in the House. You have a very conservative Republican conference. You have lawmakers who don't deal with immigration regularly. They don't have a very they don't have a lot of Latinos in their district, and for them, their constituents are telling them illegal immigration is a problem. We don't want a pathway to citizenship. And no matter what happens in the 2016 elections for the House, that makeup is not really going to change. So I think, regardless of who the president is, I think the House is always going to be, for those who want to do immigration reform, the toughest challenge. And I think even if there's a Republican House and a Republican president, and maybe even still a Republican-controlled Senate who want to do sort of bits and pieces of immigration reform, let's say border security first and other measures, you can bet, especially if, Democrats are able to block various measures in the Senate, particularly if the Republican Senate don't have 60 votes, which they surely will not have in the next Senate. You can expect a lot of pushback from them and immigration advocates as well.
But Wayne, given our experience in 2013 and even with some earlier attempts, unlikely to get any kind of big, Affordable Care Act style comprehensive immigration reform anytime soon, right? I think we lost Wayne. Sungmin, are you still there?
I'm still here.
How about you take that question? Comprehensive, we're just not likely to get anything comprehensive?
Yeah, I think comprehensive is a pretty bad, dirty word among lawmakers right now, particularly among Republicans. And that's why when the appetite was really there to do some sort of immigration reform, even then Republicans said, no, we are not doing one 1,000-page bill. We're going to break it up in little pieces, have vibrant debates on each part of immigration reform. And for a while, Democrats and immigration advocates didn't really have a problem with that, as long as each part got done. You did border security, but you also did a pathway. But now I think people are starting to see, or people are starting to believe that, it won't get done unless you do it in one kind of giant swoop.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Well, Sungmin, unfortunately, we are out of time. I think we lost Wayne, but hopefully he's still listening. We're all going to be watching to see how this plays out tonight and on the campaign trail over the next year. I'd like to thank my guests for joining us this morning. Sungmin, we appreciate you joining us again. Thanks so much.
It was great. Thank you so much.
That's Sungmin Kim. She's an assistant editor for Politico, where she reports on congressional politics. And she joined us from Washington, D.C. And Wayne L'Esperance, who joined us for the show today. He's professor of political science at New England College, where he also directs the master's program in public policy. And if Wayne, if you can still hear us, thanks so much for being with us. He joined us from Henniker, New Hampshire. And you can go to our website at NHPR to listen to .org to listen to Josh Rogers reporting on this issue. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. And I'm Dean Spiliotis, sitting in for Laura Kanoy.